to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for the day, Greta Anderson, and I've invited my Local Talk colleague, Susan Franzen, to join me today as co-host. Welcome, Susan.
Well, thanks, Greta, and it's wonderful to be here and welcome you listeners.
I wanted Susan to be on because her community spirit is such an inspiration to me. And today we are trying to inspire you, our listeners, to support what our station KHOI does for our community. As you know, we are in the middle of our spring fund drive, and the season of spring is a thread that weaves in and out of all of our stories on today's show.
Well, I started to say, are we having fun yet? But everybody must have been having fun yesterday. We had some very inspiring weather. So let's see what our weekly report from climatologist Elwin Taylor has on his mind.
Community Radio KHOI, this is Von Kettleson. We're talking weather here with ISU Extension climatologist Dr. Elwin Taylor. Certainly enjoyed that beautiful Easter Sunday weather we had, Elwin. What are we seeing weather-wise for this coming week?
Well, not so bad, except for the rain and it's cooler. Well, yes, we do anticipate some rain coming in. That would probably be starting tomorrow, but Wednesday is the time we could pick up an inch of precipitation. Yes, there's been some flow of moist air out of the Gulf of Mexico working its way up into Missouri, but once the high pressure that gave us the favorable weather for the Easter weekend gets out of the way, that is open to move in on us. And things will be not quite as warm this week either, with high temperatures a little bit cooler than they were last week. Well, some 5 to 10 degrees rather than highs in the 70s. They'll be high near 60s or in the upper 50s. Low temperatures at night could be around 41. 6 to 10 day outlook from the National Weather Service tells us to anticipate that the temperatures are a little on the cool side of usual for this time of year, going all the way out to the 26th of the month, a little bit on the moist side. Well, we won't object to either one of those. The soil temperatures, things have been looking good for the plants in the flower gardens and not too bad for the preparation of fields for the farmers. And we do wish you the very best and enjoy your spring.
All right. ISU Extension climatologist Dr. Elwin Taylor joining us. I'm Von Kettleson. This is KHOI Community Radio.
And you're listening to Local Talk. Happy Easter Monday, a day that some may have off, including our mail carriers and banks. Even the Internal Revenue Service takes this Monday off and is giving us an extra day to file our taxes, which are due tomorrow, Tuesday.
Enough about taxes, Greta. I thought here we are here to celebrate the good parts of spring.
Of course. We have a guest here in the studio for whom spring is a time of very rapid acceleration, I imagine. She is Julia Slocum of Lacewing Acres, a vegetable producer and operator of a CSA. That's the system by which people subscribe at the beginning of the season and get a weekly box of vegetables fresh from the garden. But Julia's here today to talk about a trip she was just on in Oaxaca, Mexico, as part of a delegation on a several-week learning experience. Welcome, Julia.
Thank you.
So let's get right to it. Tell us where in Oaxaca you went and why and what kind of learning experience this offered for you.
Sure. So I met up with a group called Witness for Peace. It's an organization, I think it's based in D.C., but they coordinate these delegations for U.S. citizens to go learn about how U.S. policies are affecting communities around Central and South America and the Caribbean. So they've got programs in at least 5 different countries, and you can learn. The program that I went on was agriculture, land rights, and migration. And so we went around and visited over 12 different organizations and talked to like local community activists and journalists. And we visited a migrant shelter just to talk about how U.S. policies are affecting these people.
That makes a lot of sense. It combines your interest in agriculture with an interest in justice, which I know you have. You've been on KHOI before.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, a couple times.
So, for our listeners, she was on as part of the one of the resistors to the pipeline that I guess is happened. So, So Oaxaca, when I see that name in print, it has an X in it. I think that it must have a lot of indigenous population. Is that the case?
I believe over half the population of the state of Oaxaca is indigenous, and there are a lot of different languages spoken. One of our homestays, we stayed with a family who's Zapoteco, and they speak Zapoteca. Wait, it might be the reverse. They're Zapoteca, and they speak Zapoteco.
Okay.
And so it was really interesting to be living with this family and have Spanish be our common second language.
Okay, yeah. And were they farmers as well?
This community wasn't. We went to, it's Teotitlan del Valle, and we went to meet with a women's weaving cooperative. And so it was these women that make these really beautiful weavings with natural dyes, and they sell them, and all of the profits go to these like various community projects. Like they have paid to install chimneys and kitchens to make the smoke leave, so women aren't standing in smoke. They made all of the uniforms for local school children. They raise money to help install these high efficiency stoves so that they're not going through so much firewood. So they do a lot of different projects like that.
Environmental and community oriented.
Yeah.
So what can you tell us about what you learned about U.S. policy in Mexico?
Yeah, and the biggest thing we talked about was NAFTA. So after NAFTA, over 2 million farmers lost their farms. And that was a big reason for migration out of rural areas into urban centers in Mexico, but also into the U.S. And so one of the things that we talked a lot about was how NAFTA and other free trade agreements have really devastated the Mexican economy and are a root cause of a lot of the migration of people coming from Mexico, and then we're criminalizing immigration on this side. And so people are getting squeezed, you know. And here in the U.S., most of our conversation isn't about the root causes. It's about, like, these individual people should be making different choices,
right.
You know. And it's like our analysis stops far too short.
Stops at the border.
Yes. quite literally.
I have a question about the policy. You know, in the recent presidential campaign, there was some talk about NAFTA and how bad it was and maybe reversing it. Now, I wondered if it was reversed, that wouldn't put those 2 million people back on their farms, would it?
Oh, my gosh. No, but I do wonder if, by renegotiating NAFTA, if it would be possible to have more fair trade between the U.S. and Mexico so that Mexican farmers would be able to compete more with our highly subsidized grain that's, like, flooding the country. And then that's part of why they lost their farms, right?
But I understood part of it was also because it was more profitable to use that land to sell vegetables and fruits here. That's not true. Because we see, of course, lots and lots of produce coming from Mexico.
Absolutely. It seems, though, that isn't coming from the people that had the land in the first place.
But is it coming from the land that belongs to somebody else?
Yeah. Yes.
Some kind of United Fruit Corporation type business that goes in there and knows how to capitalize.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that Trump said was that he opposed TPP, right?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, I talked to a woman at Public Citizen, an organization who works around NAFTA renegotiation, and she said that last week there was, or a couple of weeks ago now, a document came out that was outlining Trump's plans for NAFTA renegotiation, and it incorporates a lot of the aspects of TPP that would have been most damaging. You know, so it's like he said that he's against the TPP, but then he's incorporating pieces of it in his NAFTA renegotiation, and so that's something that we need to be on top of, among all of the other things.
So just to recap, the basic causes, that economic causes of this out-migration of Mexico, their loss of the land, their migration to urban centers, and then their migration northward is prices, a change in the price structure of the grain that they typically produce for their own communities, and a change in land ownership.
It seems like that. We didn't talk a whole lot about land ownership. We did talk about So over 20% of the land mass of Mexico has been given in land concessions to extractive industries like mining companies. And so it doesn't necessarily give them rights to the land, but they can begin exploration for setting up mining operations. And so we visited several communities where mining operations have begun or they're like in the process of fighting it off. And it was really interesting, similar challenges that we'd been facing with the pipeline company here in Iowa and at Standing Rock. Just like talking with these communities that have been, you know, trying to preventing the mine from coming in, right?
Right. Many people would describe industrial agriculture as an extractive
Absolutely.
Industry as well.
Yeah. We were mostly talking about, like, the human impact on these people that have left. It was really mind-blowing. Like, everywhere we went, even organizations that we went not to talk about migration, we ended up talking about migration
really?
With, like, almost every organization that we went to.
Wow.
One of the most powerful visits was we went to a migrant shelter that's part of a network of 50 migrant shelters across the country, and it's mostly for Central American immigrants that are passing through Mexico. And so just talking about how, like, we were having the flood of, you know, the flood in quotations of unaccompanied minors coming from Central America. That flow hasn't stopped. They're now, the U.S. is now paying Mexico to militarize its southern border. And so people from Central America are getting stopped in Mexico and detained and deported from Mexico. So we went to this migrant shelter and talked to, it was 40 people there, all but one were young men, and they were, you know, trying to find jobs, because they couldn't find work in their communities and their families are struggling economically, they're fleeing violence, and they are trying to be reunited with their families. And those are the three reasons you heard for immigration over and over again.
Wow. And, you know, they're trying to reunite with families, but at the same time, this migration is really ripping a lot of families apart.
Absolutely. Yeah, we met with a couple. We spoke to a man named Julio who had lived in the U.S. for 10 years, and he was deported in 2012. And he's from Guatemala, and he's on his fifth attempt trying to get to the U.S., and he's already served a year in federal prison. But he said, you know, like, What am I on the planet for if not to be with my children? And so he spent the last several years just trying to get back to them. And we spoke to another young man who he's a mechanic, and his family has a shop in El Salvador. And he said that because of the community that they're in, they are targeted by a gang from another neighborhood. And he said that he and his brother and nephew had nothing to do with any of the gangs, but one day a car pulled up and three men got out and started firing into the shop. And his brother was shot several times. His nephew was shot and killed. And after that, he decided to flee. Mm. And so he had fled and been deported back to El Salvador and was on his second attempt trying to get to the U.S. And he was leaving his family. He didn't have family in the U.S., but they're all struggling, and he felt really unsafe. So, just like incredibly powerful stories.
Right. This violence that you're describing, you know, this, of course, that's the specter that the opponents of immigration raise, you know,
right.
In the U.S. is violence. You know, these people are inherently violent, they claim, but they're escaping violence. Do we know, is U.S. policy contributing to the violence?
Well, my understanding is that the gangs actually originated in the U.S. When people were deported, it, you know, continued in these countries in Central America. But, I mean, the U.S. also plays a role in weapons dealing, you know, in Central America, also in, like, destabilizing these economies so that people have a lot of trouble getting work and like the U.S. drug war and how that has impacted like the drug cartels and what that does to destabilize and increase violence in a lot of these communities. The people that we met are just people trying to live and wanting to be safe, you know, and Yeah, and so I think, yeah, it's another one of these cases where, like, we, our analysis in the U.S., you know, it stops too short. Like, we don't get to the root cause. We just say, like, these individual people should be behaving differently, and that's not enough.
since this is local talk, I'd just like to break in why this is such a powerful thing that we have here, gift we have here in Central Iowa with KHOI, because we're talking with a local farmer. We're talking with somebody you might be buying vegetables from or having vegetables on your pizza. Is that right? Out at
Prairie Moon Winery.
Prairie Moon Winery. If you get a pizza out there, you might have some of Julia's vegetables. But she is bringing us stories from one of the most significant issues we're all facing in this country in some way. But these are personal stories that come from her experience. And this is something you probably only get on KHOI. So if you are a listener and you have not been a contributor, we'd love to have you as a member. And so join us in this international quest on local talk.
Well, you know, and here at KHOI, we have a mission of community building.
Yes.
And I know that, Julia, your trip was funded in part by this wonderful community that we have here in Central Iowa.
Yeah, I was completely blown away. A few weeks before the deadline for the, you know, paying for the trip, I was like, there's only 3 weeks. There's no way I'm going to raise enough money. And I just, you know, one night late put up a Indiegogo site and put a call out on Facebook. And my community raised over $2,000 in 48 hours. So I was totally blown away. And almost 3,000 by the time I left for Mexico.
That's very inspiring.
Yes.
So those of you who are thinking about give to KHOI, you can call 515-292-2878 or text. What's our new text number?
Oh, I'm all thumbs. Sorry. But we have a website, khoifm.org. You go there and you press the donate now button and you can find a way to donate to KHOI. You can find, if there's a will, there's a way. Just like with Julia, she needed to go and witness for peace and witness to what's going on in Mexico, and she found a way.
She found a way, and we found a way that you can text us at 515-200-7758.
Well, Julia, before we let you go, I really want to know a little bit about what you saw on the agricultural end.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we met with a few really wonderful communities, and we met with an organization called Puente that is advocating for the cultivation and consumption of amaranth, which was a big part of the pre-Hispanic diet. And it was really wonderful talking to these. A lot of them were young farmers, and so we met with them. We did some harvest with them, and put the amaranth through the thresher, and then we tried some beverages. They made us like a horchata out of amaranth, and so that was really fun. It was a really hopeful, inspiring group of people to be around. It was so much more than this like economic venture. It was this like reclamation of pre-Hispanic culture. You know, it just like went so much deeper than a business. And so that was really beautiful. We met with another community that works with this farmer-to-farmer learning organization, and they'd been putting up irrigation. They'd like built an irrigation pond that had pipes running down to their fields. They put up greenhouses and a fruit orchard to try and increase their year-round food production so that they could be more self-sufficient in their community. And they'd also been working on this. They'd noticed in the 70s that their goat herds were deforesting the slopes. They're on really steep slopes.
Oh, yeah.
And so they decided to reduce the number of goats in their herd and keep them off of the really steep areas. And they had planted over 300,000 trees in their region in the last. But it was really incredible to see all of the creativity and energy and effort, like ways that they were focusing that on improving the quality of life for people in their community.
Did it bring back any ideas for you? Certainly some inspiration, but specific ideas for your farm that you want to try maybe to bring back a crop or something that we've neglected?
Oh, my goodness. We have some really fun crops that we don't eat a lot of here. I mean, we could be eating amaranth here. Not that, I mean, we have the variety we have here is definitely borderline invasive, so I wouldn't want it to be planted everywhere. But yeah, I think like eating what we would consider weeds is a really common thing. And I think that that is really important, like purslane, and dandelions and pigweed and lamb's quarter. Like these are things that you find in your yard that are all over my farm and, are totally edible and nutritious. And, so I think that was one thing, but
you're going to have some purslane salad.
Yes. Yeah, put that in your potato salad.
Well, dandelion salad is really good if you can get nice, safe dandelions that haven't been sprayed.
Right. That's the key.
Well, we know that they haven't been sprayed on your farm,
no.
Lacewing Acres.
Yeah, that's right.
So do you have your full complement of CSA customers yet?
Oh, we're still taking new members if you're looking for a CSA family this year.
Okay. Well, Julia, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your experiences in Oaxaca.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We're in the middle of our spring fun drive, and we have some guests taking their seats as we are kind of Grand Central Station right now. Everyone has a community efforts that we love to promote here on Local Talk, and of course we love it when you recognize the community effort that we ourselves accomplish by promoting others' efforts. So please consider giving to KHOI. You can text us 200-7758. 200-7758 is our text number. And of course, many of us are not that technologically fancy, and we just go for the KHOIFM.org, the online, which we used to think was the fancy way of giving, the Donate Now button, or even the most popular way of people to give so far has been simply to mail a check to 410 Douglas Avenue.
Well, actually, my favorite is for people to come in and see us. And many renewals, many people say, you know, I haven't been in for a while, and here's my check.
Yes, the physical world still exists, and we are part of it. And we have been joined by two bodies here. Sandra Luft and Elizabeth Wenzel are leaders of a group called Critical Mass.
This is a nationwide community building movement to bring families to streets for community bike rides. And Sandra was one of the people who brought this concept to Ames. How many years ago was that, Sandra?
Hi. Thanks for having me here today. 5 years. It'll be 5 years this August. I was actually just thinking about that yesterday, that we're excited to be in our fifth season already.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I made an error. Elizabeth is not able to join us today, but we have another guest who's scheduled for later in the hour. I'm sorry. I didn't recognize you, Lojine.
This is KHOI Community Radio, in case you just tuned in. And we just earlier said goodbye to our first guest, Julia Slocum, who were talking about a trip to Mexico. And now we've shifted to our new guest.
And they're all very summer-oriented types of activities because Critical Mass, well, Julia has her vegetable garden that's underway.
Yes.
And Critical Mass is a monthly bike riding expedition that Sandra and her friends put on and invite families to join. And, of course, that can't begin until the weather starts to warm up.
Right.
And then Lojine here from the Farmers Market is helping farmers like Julia sell their goods. So we're all looking forward to the warmer weather, although Elwin Taylor told us we don't get it quite this week.
No. You know, people, I'll run into people, it's spring! It's spring! And my response is, this is Iowa.
Yeah, okay. Better hold your horses there. Okay, Sandra, your children must have swapped out a few bikes since they first started doing Critical Mass. Or maybe they've started riding bikes instead of trailing behind.
That's true. We started them with the Burley trailer and even a little front of the bike seat that they would ride with us. And now they're riding on their own. And we're just talking about upgrading them to the next size up. And we have that in our group. We have kids who get trailed, who are little and just getting pulled along. We have kids who are riding on their own and learning bike safety. And more advanced cyclists. And then, of course, lots of adults. You can just be a kid at heart to join us. You don't have to be a kid.
You don't have to have a kid either.
You don't have to have a kid. No, it's a community bike ride for everyone. It's just kid-friendly, and so we ride at a slower pace. And the whole point is we actually love having adults on the ride because we're trying to teach kids how to use the road safely. And it helps to have that safety in numbers and to have a few adults who can model proper riding behavior. So signaling, putting your arm out to signal, stopping at a stop sign, watching for cars, modeling that for our younger cyclists is wonderful. So anyone interested is welcome to join us.
That's such a great idea. I think I would need to be on the kids. I'd need to be on the learning side. I'm not exactly sure I have the best writing behavior. Well,
you need to come out and join us then.
Actually, as you were talking about adults riding with you, it flashed through my mind that, of course, one of the first things that teenagers want to do is learn how to drive a car. And it's really important to have biking experience before you ride a car. I know my husband, as an adult bike rider, had a couple of encounters with young drivers who just didn't see him. They didn't, you know, bike, were not in their frame of reference.
It's true. And I think once you're biking, it does impact you in terms of how you view pedestrians and cyclists around you, even when you're in a car. It makes for just safer users of the road altogether. I'm much more aware of cyclists since I bike, and so I see them even if I'm in my car. So I think, it's a good thing.
And, of course, it gets people together. It gets people active. Yeah. There's a social component to the bike ride.
Yes. And we actually, our next ride is coming up this coming Saturday for Earth Day. We're joining with another local group and doing a joint ride and meeting at Brookside Park at 10 a.m. with, it's the Ames Bicycle Day group. They're organizing a longer ride. And so we'll join in and we can do the full 8 miles with them, or we'll have shorter routes available. And then can I tell you about more of our rides coming
up? Absolutely. But just to reiterate, that this coming Saturday is Earth Day.
Yes.
And 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock is start at Brookside Park at 10. So if you're there a little bit before 10 when we get going, that's ideal. So everybody just kind of comes to the meeting point on their own. And then from there we go en masse as a group to wherever our destination is. And so for the Earth Day ride, we'll have a longer route, and I'm not entirely sure if we stop at different places. We'll probably just end back up at Brookside at the end. When we plan our routes, we usually have a fun destination such as a park or the farmer's market. We quite often have rides that end at the farmer's market to connect to other local events, introduce our cyclists to other things they could be doing in the community.
Like a little free book libraries. I know you've had one that does that.
That's right. Yeah, we had a books and bikes ride. We had a few of them during the multiple seasons we've had where we ride around, we stop at all the little free libraries, which are fantastic all over Ames. We've also ridden to the fire station and had tours of the fire station. The fire people were super nice to us and showed us around, had the kids slide down the pole and all kinds of fun things. So lots of ways to also engage with our community, because I think that makes for better neighbors, makes for a better place to live.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have one coming up this Earth Day, this Saturday. What else? Usual time that you...
You know, we used to have like a regular last Saturday of the month, but we switched up now to plug more into events. So now our full ride schedule is on our website, which is just ameskidiclemass.wordpress.com. You can also search for Ames Kidical Mass on Facebook or Twitter and find us. Or if you are connected with the Ames Bicycle Coalition, we're sister organizations. They link to all our stuff, so you can find us that way.
Okay. Kidical Mass, just for folks who are listening and can't picture the word, it's like critical mass, except it's with the word kid.
Because for kids. Exactly. And for those who, vaguely know, critical mass is just an organized bike ride, mostly for adults to take back the street, claim the street, and ride en masse on the street. So a critical mass of cyclists. And this is a kidical for kids mass of cyclists on the road.
K-I-D-I-C-A-L.
Yes, thank you. So ameskidiclemass.wordpress.com. For our full ride schedule. And then some other fun rides, like I said, we're going to the farmer's market on July 29th for our July ride. We have a bike rodeo at the Ames High School in May, organized by the Ames Kiwanis Club. We're connecting to ISU Summerfest in June, so our ride will take us to Summerfest in Campus Town. We always have a Halloween ride in October. We usually go to Weedsfield for treats. And in September, we always plug into the National Kidical Massive, where organizations, Kidical Mass groups all over, not just the U.S., but in Canada and Europe and Asia, hold one big kids bike ride that day. It's a global kids take the road bike ride, and it's always September 19th, and we try to represent in Iowa in Ames with our own group. So details, dates, you know, start dates, location, all of that is on our website or Facebook.
Yeah. Well, I just have to say that some of my favorite memories of childhood were on a bicycle, and I'm sure I'm not alone in that. Mm-hmm. We see some nodding faces.
I never learned to ride a bicycle. It had been a bizarre loss in my whole life with everybody in my family riding a bicycle except me.
No, it's never too late.
I tried at 40, and I wiped out at the bottom of Highland Hill. And that sort of ended it. But I'm sorry. But there are people who don't have this experience, and it's been a big loss. I mean,
well, that's why it's good to start kids early, right? We get a lot more fearful about trying new things when we're older. So getting them early on the bike, that's
kind
what we're
like
trying
swimming.
To do too.
Get
them comfortable out on the road, not just in their own driveway, but, you know, actually getting somewhere by bike.
Well, Sandra, any last words about Kidical Mass, about Earth Day bike ride? How long should people schedule for this bike ride if they're going to go with their children, their young children, and not go for that 8-mile bike ride?
You know, that's a great question. I think most of our events, most of our rides are about an hour long. And that, you know, that's because we move at a slow pace. We stop when we need to, and we end at a park and everyone plays for a little while, and the adults get to know the other adults around, and then everybody kind of takes off on their own timeline. So it can be, I think, a longer event if people linger, but it doesn't need to take a lot out of your day, just an hour in the morning outside with your kids.
And a great chance to meet other parents and for your kids to meet other kids who might not go to their elementary.
Right. It's great. We've met a lot of people in the community this way, and then we keep seeing them in other places in the community, and so it's nice. It's what makes Ames a really great home.
Wow. Very well put, Sandra. Thank you so much for doing Kidical Mass and coming on today.
Thank you for your continued support. We always really appreciate that KHOI is always, you know, helping spread the word and promoting our group and our bike ride. So thank you.
You're welcome. And that's what we do here at KHOI.
It certainly is. Thank you for your affirmation, and we hope to have lots more Kidical Masses to celebrate.
Thank you.
All right, so we are in fun drive mode. That's why we're pumping ourselves, promoting ourselves, patting ourselves on the back. We hope you appreciate the work we do here at KHOI, and especially on Local Talk, where we bring folks from the community in to talk about people's stories and events. And we've got Lojean Peterson here, who is the director of the Ames Main Street Farmers Market.
Great. Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And this is, again, one of the treasures of our community, and another very potent opportunity for people to build community, make connections with others, see their friends, and make new ones.
Right.
The Ames Farmers Market. So what is your vision this year? Just continue to build on the past year's successes?
Right. We start our 7th season this year, starting in May 6th through October 28th, and we will be bigger than we have been in the past years. We're going to be full to capacity this year. We have many new vendors, and it's going to be very exciting.
New vendors doing selling new stuff, different things that we don't expect.
We have some new crafters that will be bringing some leather goods.
Leather,
yes,
great.
Yeah,
that's an Iowa product.
And we have a couple new produce vendors, a tea vendor, lemonade. Fresh squeezed lemonade, which he came part-time last year, and it was wonderful. And we've had four occasional vendors that have joined us last year that will be full-time vendors. So they found the market to be something they really enjoyed and joined us full-time. So that's always encouraging to see that.
When you say it's full to capacity, does that you're talking about a couple of blocks on Main Street?
Then. 300 and 400 blocks.
Okay.
And we've always had plenty of room to bring in occasionals, and have that extra space. Now, this year it's going to be different. With all the new vendors, we have like 8 new vendors full-time, which means we won't have as much room for our occasional vendors that come. And we usually have like 60-some occasional vendors that join us through the year.
60?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, we had 113 vendors join us last year.
Wow, and even more this year, evidently.
Right. That includes full-time, occasional, and then we have nonprofits that we allow to come in for free and promote their activities during the year, too.
Well, Lauren Franzen of the Hi. Ames Chamber of Commerce is the person who sent you here. She's mm-hmm. our regular guest on the third Monday of the month. And so this must be doing a lot of good for the Ames economy as well.
Oh, I believe so, yes. It always, most of these are local growers or crafters, so they're part of the community already. And so that just builds on the local economy. And then what's been fun over the last few years is that we've had 5 of the businesses transition into full-time brick-and-mortar stores also.
Oh, okay. Tell us about those. Which businesses have they?
Salt and Pretzel.
Salt
they
and Pretzel.
They have a business up in Somerset. Carlos Quesadillas has a place in the mall, North Grand Mall. Let me see. Who are the others? Oh, Local Yokels, which was a group, and they went and opened up a restaurant in Des Moines, and they were here for several years. And let me see. Willie's Barbecue has a place in
Willie's
Des Moines.
Willie's Barbecue.
Yes,
oh,
yes.
Oh, yeah. We love Willie's.
He just started last year. I mean, the new business did. And there's one more. Oh, Little Woods Herbs and Teas.
Right.
Here on Main Street.
Right.
So,
just a couple doors uh-huh. down from us.
Yes.
That's great. Yeah, Willie's Barbecue provided the food for our summer birthday bash.
Oh,
last
wonderful.
Year. We celebrate our birthday every August, and so Willie's was brought in to provide food for that.
Yeah, they're really good. Well, the market kind of provides a nice place for someone who's interested in starting a business or wanting to promote their items. It's a, what do I want to say, affordable way to start and get your product out there and kind of get a reaction from the local community.
Right, right. You are face-to-face
right.
with your customers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a business incubator.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So.
And I know that they have, you know, there's a lot of more fancy and bureaucratic ways to do business incubation, but it seems like Main Street Farmers Market is a real
right.
down-to-earth easy way to get in.
Now, I have a question about something that was a change last year. You had the food trucks all
yes.
in one place.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognize some of those that, you know, for example, there was one from Story City, and I remember, you know, that they came down and you could see it there. And I don't know whether
right.
they also have a brick-and-mortar store someplace or not. But anyway, I was wondering, are you going to continue having those sort of segregated in one area? How do you work that?
I think that was probably for our food truck showdown.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the food truck showdown. Mm-hmm. That was what it was.
Which we are going to have again this year starting on May 6th is our food truck showdown, and we will have another one in October.
Oh.
But that's when we bring in, we'll bring in about 8 more food truck vendors. We'll have 15 of them.
I see. So that wasn't every week. I just
right.
happened to be there when
yes.
it was going on. And I was very pleased that there still were other vendors sprinkled throughout the 2 blocks.
Right.
Because, you know, it's nice to not have to go down to the food trucks if you just want to get.
Right. Although this year I do think we're going to sprinkle them throughout the vendors just because it got congested down there. And that way, hopefully, the visitors will wander all mm. through the market.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of diesel generators.
Yes.
Right in one area.
Right.
So, well, I mean, the $100,000 question is, when is the first farmer's market?
May 6th. Which is about 3 weeks away.
Okay, so you're mm-hmm. having the local food showdown for the very first, for the
right.
kickoff.
Mainly because we usually start out with a few less vendors due to the weather.
Right.
Maybe their produce isn't ready quite yet, so they don't start that very first week.
Right.
So we have a few extra spaces. Although this year, with the weather, that's not a problem, so we will be full.
You know, I've sometimes on a Saturday in early May, it can be kind of brutal out there,
right,
and I always feel bad for the vendors. We have some vendor friends who are associated with the station.
Yeah, like the president of the board.
So, yeah. But they're pretty faithful about what they do.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
They are.
And we'll have some musical entertainment, I'm sure, throughout the season.
Absolutely. We have two musical groups every week that will come and join us, and that will be fun. We have children activities throughout the year. So,
what kinds of children's activities are there?
We have a lot of nonprofit groups that will come and provide an activity for the children. We also have petting zoos. We have three scheduled this year. And the first one is May 20th, I believe. And Joyful Colors is a face painting artist that will come and for free and paint your children faces, which is always a great draw. They love that.
Yeah.
And
And balloon tying. I bet you have some
balloon
tying.
Oh, we have two wonderful balloon artists that come, right. And they always have a line.
Right.
It's fun.
Yeah. It is one of those events, just like the Kittical Mass,
yes,
that just is for the whole family, the Ames Farmers Market, and happens every Saturday.
Yes, it does, and it's so community building.
And it's so wonderful to have it downtown. I mean, for so many years, we struggled with not having a downtown farmers market, and then somebody stepped up. I'm not exactly sure how it happened, but how many years has it been here downtown now?
7 years now.
7 years.
And I do think it's a beautiful place to have the market, you know, and wander the shops. And the street is so pretty. They have beautiful flowers planted in the flower pots. And the street, it's just a nice atmosphere, you know. We put tables out there for people to visit. We see a lot, just a wide variety of people, you know. You have your children and families and young professionals and your adults and older adults, and they all come and they sit and they visit. They meet friends. You see them meeting up with friends that maybe they haven't seen for a while, and they stand there and visit, and it's just fun to...
Well, one of our stalwarts, radio producers, Roger Berger.
Sure.
I know he won an award because of his volunteer work with the Main
He's
Street Farmers
He's there every
Market.
Week with us.
And, you know, it just shows how similar in spirit the operations we have are.
Mm-hmm.
The community radio, the community farmers market, we're all about, you know,
fostering that community spirit.
And really making people aware of what's available in our community.
That's right. It really is a learning experience to go to the farmer's market. I mean, you know, to stop at a new, for example, the fermented foods. I can't even think the proper name
kombucha.
For it. Well, kombucha is one of them, but there are, sauerkraut's the most familiar, but there are all of these various pickled things and preserved things that you wouldn't imagine. And, and I first discovered, I'm maybe a little behind the times, but I first discovered probiotics at a farmer's market stand, you know, and I could taste them. I didn't just have to read about them or see them online. Well, this is what that is. And,
That's something I think is so wonderful, is that you get that face-to-face contact with your grower or the producer, and you'll see something that you've never realized was something you could cook or what it was, and they are so good about telling you how to fix it and how they grew it. Do they use chemicals? Do they use natural things? You know, so it's all my vendors, I think, are very good at giving information about their stuff. So you can always learn something.
Yeah, and we develop a relationship. You know,
yes, you do.
I want to buy my my herbs from this person, this
right.
stand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. Somebody else wants to buy from that stand.
Yes. 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 They all have their followers.
Yes.
So, Lojean, if someone wants to get in touch with you, they're a potential vendor or an entertainer, somebody who mm-hmm. wants to get involved with the farmers market, how do they reach you?
They can call the Ames Chamber of Commerce and get a hold of me. We have a website, AmesMainStreetFarmersMarket.com, that they can find information and download an application if they're interested. Or Facebook, message us on Facebook.
Okay. Those are three great ways.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Lojean, for coming
welcome.
In.
Thanks for having me.
And we look forward to May 6th, the
yes.
opening of the farmers market.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, we turn now to another community building event, that of the Ames Community Arts Council, which for about a year now has been hosting a monthly gathering of artists open to anyone who makes arts. The April meeting takes place tomorrow, and it takes place at the house of one of Local Talk correspondents Kay Puddock's neighbors, Kaka Barney Merchant, who comes from Pakistan and has taught in both Pakistan and London. Here's Kay in conversation with her neighbor, artist Kaka Barney Merchant.
My guest is artist Kaka Barney Merchant. And I do want to put in the Barney because that's the name. That was her name before she married. And under that name, she produced a lot of artwork. And the immediate reason for Kaka's visit today is that this coming Tuesday, April the 18th, there'll be a gathering of artists at her studio home in Ames, just west of the stadium.
This is Ames Arts Council's program, and every month one artist hosts for this gathering, and the artists get together and share their ideas of their paintings and work.
I was especially interested this month because you're my neighbor, my next-door neighbor, in fact,
yes.
and I know what a beautiful and interesting studio you've got.
Thank you.
Would you like to talk a bit about how you built that studio?
When I moved here, I opened my art gallery downtown Ames, mm-hmm. and after 16 years, I closed my art gallery because I travel a lot, and I open my studio at home now.
Yeah, and I should add, I know this because I'm Cow Cub's neighbor, the house next to theirs happened
yes.
to become vacant. And they bought it, and they joined the two houses together with the garage.
Yes.
And now that extra house as
yes,
it were,
yes.
is the studio, and also, I believe, where your son lives.
Yeah, we needed a place for my son mm-hmm. because he's at Iowa State University. So we thought we can buy this house and make my studio mm-hmm. and his living like apartment.
Right. The studio is called 4, these are all digits, 4U2C. I was looking again around your studio the other day, and you've got different styles, different media, and you've had different periods in your work.
I started my career in 1981. Since then, I made for one exhibition like 25 paintings or 30 paintings, so I sold all 2-3 I have for my collection. And there are in different timings paintings. Mm-hmm. So you can see all different type of...
Right.
Yes.
Yes, you had a sort of cubist period.
Right. That was my lovely period of my paintings.
Some of your paintings are abstract.
Abstract style. In the beginning, I started with the super realistic paintings, mm-hmm. like tablecloth, crochets, and I paint that lace table cover by a brush. That is super realistic painting, and I arrange the still life, and then I paint.
Oh, I see.
And after that, I changed a little bit realistic and with abstract.
Mm-hmm.
It's called combined paintings. So one object is realistic, and background and other surroundings are abstract style. After that, I saw women's are working very hard in the villages, Pakistan.
Yeah, Kaka is from Pakistan.
Yes, and I thought maybe I can preserve those motifs they are making by hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I used those motifs in my paintings, and I paste some actual fabric on the canvas, and then I paint on that. So that is my collages.
Yes, and a collage I saw yesterday used some of the netting, like from a bag of onions or a bag of oranges.
Right, right.
And then you put a glaze over that.
Yes.
It just stuck to the canvas. It was very effective.
Oh, yes. But I'm experimenting every day. So you can see different kind of... So my son was saying, Mom, keep on style. I said, I'm experimenting.
You'll be able to see a huge variety of styles if you go to the event on Tuesday. Now, you've also done a lot of things that won't show up in your studio display in your past. In Pakistan, you were an art teacher, and you've built sets for dramatic productions. You've made the costumes. So you've done a lot of things, artistic things. Had a very varied career.
Yes. I was a teacher 15 years in Karachi. It's Karachi, Pakistan. Under Church of England. That is British system in a school. And every year they have musical concerts. And I was in charge of all the props and backdrops and all the scenes and everything. We did Mary Poppins, Hans Christian Andersen, and My Fair Lady, and so many.
Yeah. You've also done art restoration for museums and for private commissions.
Yes. So Karachi Arts Council, they hired me for restoration work of old paintings. These are for museum.
And she does have before and after photographs. So that's something else you can see maybe. Although there is so much to see just hanging on the walls. So I'll give you the address. It's 2130 McCarthy Road. That's on the corner of McCarthy and Gaskill, and it's west of the stadium. And the time is from
6 to 8
on Tuesday.
On Tuesday.
April the 18th. Well, I'm sure everyone that comes will have a very interesting experience.
Yeah.
That was Kaka Barney Merchant hosting this month's Gathering of Artists, coordinated by the Ames Community Arts Council. If you are an artist, you're welcome to go. And, of course, Art Walk is coming up, usually right at the beginning of summer, and Kakab's gallery will be one of those that opens their doors to non-artist visitors and lovers of art, so keep her in mind for that. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Greta Anderson, together with my co-host, Susan Franzen. We started out the show with Julia Slocum, owner of Lacewing Acres, telling us about her recent study trip to Mexico as part of a delegation for Witness for Peace. We were then joined by Sandra Luft of Kittical Mass. They're holding an Earth Day bike ride for families and other bike riders this coming Saturday. It's Earth Day at 10 o'clock. Meet at Brookside Park. We also had Lojean Peterson of the Main Street Farmers Market visit us from the Ames Chamber of Commerce, getting us geared up for the Farmers Market, which begins May 6th.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon today. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And I have to mention that if you feel like pressing the donate button while you're there, that's part of our mission this week. You will also find information about our guests along with relevant links to today's show. That's khoifm.org. Thanks to our webmaster, Ron Carson, for making this possible.
And at 7 p.m. tonight, in Local Talk's regular slot, we have a special live music broadcast. It's the Pantorium Sessions, a series of live music concerts that we have during the fun drive. Today we have Bill Morrison and Del Schmidt, sometimes known as Bill and Del, sometimes Morrison and Schmidt. They are two artists who are most often heard playing with Larry Red Stoltenberg of Red's Blues. In fact, I think they may be dragging him on stage to the mic for a couple of numbers. This is something different tonight. They'll have some original material as well as classic rock numbers. Something special to look forward to, all part of our spring fun drive efforts to showcase what our station does in our community please come by a few minutes before 7 or tune us in at 89.1 FM.
Local Talk is engineered today by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878 or through our website, khoifm.org.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible.
And those generous contributions are what we need this spring fund drive. Please pledge your support for this fine community institution and help us meet our challenge grant of $15,000. In the meantime,
thanks for listening
and see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.
Support for KHOI comes from ISU Theater, presenting The Tempest, Shakespeare's fantastical tale of deception, revenge, and redemption, April 20th through 23rd at Fisher Theater in Ames. Tickets and more information at theater.iastate.edu.